You're southbound, cruising at 4,500 feet on a gorgeous VFR day. Smooth air, sectional chart up on the iPad. You're thinking about lunch at the destination? And then your radio crackles. Not a traffic call, not routine ATC chatter. Someone on a frequency you weren't monitoring is asking you, very directly, to state your intentions. You look up and there's an F-16 off your left wing. That scenario has played out dozens of times over the past 2 decades in the airspace surrounding the nation's capital. I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about the Washington, D.C. Special Flight Rules Area, which most pilots just call the D.C. SFRA. It is the most layered, most actively monitored, and most misunderstood piece of airspace in the continental United States. And if you ever plan to fly anywhere on the East Coast, you need to understand it cold before you start the engine. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. A great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. Let's set the stage. Before September 11th, 2001, the airspace around Washington, D.C. looked a lot like the airspace around any other major metropolitan area with a Class Bravo. Reagan National, or DCA, sat in the middle of a Bravo that topped out at about 7,300 feet. You needed an explicit clearance to operate inside it. Outside the Bravo, the rules were the same rules that applied everywhere else in the country. All of that changed in the days and months after the attacks. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, working with the Department of Defense and the Department of Homeland Security, began building a new kind of airspace specifically designed around the threat of an aircraft being used as a weapon. They weren't just protecting corridors of sky anymore, they were protecting the Capitol, the White House, the Pentagon, and a city full of federal infrastructure with no equivalent anywhere else in the country. The result, established through a special federal aviation regulation and later made permanent in the Code of Federal Regulations, is a two-layer system drawn as concentric rings around the DCA VHF Omnidirectional Range, or VUAR, at Reagan National Airport. The outer ring is the SFRA itself, 30 nautical miles from that VUAR in every direction. This airspace is depicted on your sectional chart with a thick magenta boundary that doesn't look like anything else you've seen on a chart before. Inside that ring, you are in actively managed, continuously monitored airspace. The requirements for operating there as a visual flight rules, or VFR, pilot are specific. All of them. Before you get anywhere near that boundary, here's something I wish someone had told me earlier in training. The rules for the DC SFRA are not the same as any other airspace you've already learned. You cannot follow the Class Bravo rules and assume you're covered. The SFRA adds its own requirements on top of everything else, and they are not optional. Inside the SFRA, but outside the inner ring. Here's what you need. First, you must complete the DC SFRA online training course before you fly there. Not the week of, before. It's available at the FAA safety website, and when you finish it, you receive a course completion number. When you contact Air Traffic Control or ATC to enter the SFRA, you'll be expected to provide that number. The course is not long, and it covers exactly what we're discussing today, but you cannot skip it and figure you already know the material. You have to have done it and have that number with you. Second, you must file a DC SFRA flight plan, not a standard VFR flight plan, a specific SFRA flight plan. It includes your route through the airspace, your aircraft information, and it gets filed before you depart or before you reach the boundary. ATC uses it to track your intentions before you ever call in. Third, you must establish and maintain two-way radio communication with ATC for the entire time you're inside the 30 nautical mile ring. This isn't like flying near a Class Delta where you make contact, get the information you need, and go back to UNICOM once you're clear. You're on frequency the whole time. ATC will assign you a discrete transponder code, not 1200, a specific 4-digit code for your flight. You squawk that code throughout your transit, and you squawk it with Mode C, altitude encoding. They are watching your altitude just as closely as your position. Let me walk through what this looks like in practice. Say you're departing from a general aviation airport in Virginia, and your destination puts you inside the SFRA boundary the day before. Or at least before you depart, you file your SFRA flight plan. You've already completed the online course and written the completion number on your knee board. As you get airborne and approach the boundary, you contact Potomac Approach, which is typically the facility you'll be talking to on the west and south sides of the SFRA. Something like Potomac Approach, Skyhawk 72 Tango 10 miles southwest of the SFRA boundary, VFR, requesting SFRA transit course, completion number is, and you give them the number. They verify your flight plan, assign you a transponder code, and clear you into the airspace. From that point on, you stay on frequency, you stay at your assigned altitude, and you don't deviate from your filed route without telling them first. When you exit the SFRA, you let them know. They'll often respond with something like radar service terminated, squawk, VFR, frequency change approved, and then you're back to the normal world. That's the procedure when it works. Right now, let's talk about what happens when it doesn't. Inside the SFRA, closer to Reagan National, is the Flight Restricted Zone, or FRZ. The FRZ is substantially smaller than the SFRA, centered on the same DCAVOR, and the rules inside it are in a completely different category. For most general aviation pilots, the FRZ is essentially off-limits. I want to be direct about that. If you are a standard VFR pilot flying a rented airplane and you do not have a specific reason to operate inside the FRZ, you should treat that boundary as a wall. There are three general aviation airports that sit within the FRZ: College Park Airport in Maryland, Potomac Airfield in Maryland, and Washington Executive, also known as Hyde Field in Maryland. Pilots operating from those airports follow specific procedures that involve security requirements well beyond the outer SFRA. We're talking about Transportation Security Administration, or TSA. Involvement, background checks. Operating from those airports is legal, but it is not casual, and it is not something you stumble into. If you accidentally enter the FRZ as a VFR pilot without authorization, what happens is immediate. The North American Aerospace Defense Command, or NORAD, tracks this airspace continuously. The Secret Service is notified. The fighters at Joint Base Andrews are on alert. Intercepts have happened. The pilots who have been through one and then landed and dealt with the aftermath will tell you it is not an experience you want, not even a little. Let me bring this back to the chart for a moment, because here's something pilots sometimes miss when they look at a sectional near DC. The Class Bravo for Reagan National sits inside the SFRA. So when you're flying in that area, you're dealing with both sets of rules simultaneously. The Bravo requires an explicit ATC clearance to enter. The SFRA requires the filed flight plan, the online course, the discrete transponder code, continuous radio contact. These are not redundant requirements that cancel each other out. They are separate requirements that happen to apply to the same piece of sky. The Mode C veil, the 30 nautical mile ring around any Class Bravo where you're required to have an altitude encoding transponder, also overlaps with the SFRA, but that's the floor of what you need inside the SFRA, not the ceiling. Now the practical question, what if you just want to avoid the SFRA entirely? The boundary, 30 nautical miles from the DCAVOR is well marked on your sectional and in your global positioning system, or GPS, moving map database. If you're routing around it, you need to stay outside that ring. 30 nautical miles from Reagan National reaches a long way. It touches parts of Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, Delaware, and depending on the geometry, portions of Pennsylvania. If you're flying up or down the East Coast on a cross-country, you might be surprised how significantly it affects your routing options. Some pilots going north or south route well to the west of the SFRA to stay clear of it. Others plan a compliant transit directly through. Both are valid choices. But you have to make a deliberate, informed decision before you go. Looking at your route on a planning app and seeing you're 14 miles outside the SFRA boundary and thinking close but I'm fine is not a plan. Know exactly where the boundary is and give yourself a comfortable margin if you're choosing to stay out. Here's a scenario that plays out more often than it should. A relatively new private pilot, maybe a year or two out from the check ride, is doing a cross-country to visit someone in the mid-Atlantic region. They trained in the Midwest. They know Class Bravo, Class Charlie. They know their airspace. But they've never specifically encountered or studied the DCSFRA because there's nothing like it where they trained. They don't realize part of their route puts them inside the 30 nautical mile ring. They don't look for it because it doesn't pattern match to any airspace they've dealt with before. Within a few minutes of crossing the boundary without a flight plan, without a discrete code, without prior contact with Potomac Approach, there's a facility that has an uncoordinated aircraft inside 30 miles of the nation's capital. People notice fast. This is exactly why I'm spending a full segment on this. Every student pilot should know the DCSFRA exists before they ever fly a solo cross-country. It is not something you can afford to discover by accident. The Aeronautical Information Manual has a thorough section on the DCSFRA, and the FAA maintains a dedicated page on their official website with the specific procedures, the airport information, and a direct link to the online course. Read it before you plan any flight in the mid-Atlantic. The airman certification standards for private pilot include knowledge of special use airspace and special flight rules areas. Your examiner may or may not ask you about the DCSFRA specifically on your checkride, but if you're going to be flying anywhere east of the Appalachians, you need this information regardless of what the checkride covers. One more thing before we close, the intercept procedures. If you ever find yourself being intercepted by a military aircraft, standard international procedures apply. The intercepting aircraft will rock its wings and position off your left wing. You acknowledge with a wing rock of your own and follow. They will lead you to a landing area. While this is happening, you should be attempting to contact ATC or the intercepting aircraft on guard frequency, which is 1.2 1.5 MHz. Use Squawk 7700. These procedures are in the AIM-AM. They are worth reading and then reading again. Not because I think an intercept is likely, but because if it ever happens, panic will not serve you. Knowing what to do will, the DCSFRA is not a trap. It exists because of a specific ongoing threat assessment that did not exist before 2001 and has not gone away. The procedures are designed to give legitimate general aviation traffic a legal, safe pathway through some of the most sensitive airspace in the world. Follow the procedures, and you will be fine. Complete the online course, file the SFRA flight plan, contact ATC before you hit the boundary, squawk the code you're assigned, stay on frequency. If any of that feels uncertain on a given trip, route around it and do your homework before the next one. The FAA's DCSFRA resources at the official FAA.gov website are the authoritative source for procedures and boundaries. Also check radiohangar.com for links and additional resources. Fly smart out there. I'm Pattern. See you next time on Traffic Pattern.